Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. Bin Laden's secret letters. The U.S. government has released scores of documents it said were recovered during the 2011 raid in Pakistan on the compound where U.S. forces killed al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence said the decision to release the documents, quote, aligns with the president's call for increased transparency consistent with national security prerogatives, end quote. The material released Wednesday included a variety of declassified documents, personal letters to members of bin Laden's family, a list of English language books recovered from the compound, think tank studies, software, and other technical manuals and material published by other militant groups. U.S. President Barack Obama says that global climate change poses immediate risks to the country's national security, increasing the possibility of natural disasters and humanitarian crises. The American leader is speaking Wednesday at graduation ceremonies at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut. Islamic State fighters seized parts of the ancient Syrian town of Palmyra Wednesday, sparking fears that the militant group would destroy a priceless archaeological site. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the militants have taken as much as a third of the city following a series of heavy clashes, mainly in the city's north. Palmyra's 2,000-year-old ruins, they're designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site, are located in the city's southwest. IS briefly overran the northern part of Palmyra on Saturday, but lost hold after less than 24 hours. This is VOA News. Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said Wednesday that international inspectors will not be given access to his country's scientists or military sites under any nuclear deal with world powers. He also said Iran will not give in to excessive demands. Negotiators from Iran and a group that includes Britain, China, France, Russia, the United States, and Germany have been working on the details of a final agreement to scale back Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. They reached a framework deal last month and have given themselves until June 30th for the final agreement. The talks are continuing Wednesday in Vienna. Indonesia and Malaysia have agreed to provide temporary refuge for the thousands of migrants and human trafficking victims stranded at sea. The breakthrough was announced Wednesday following a meeting between the foreign ministers of Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand, countries that had expressed a reluctance to assist the migrants. Malaysian Foreign Minister Anifa Aman announced the plans at a news conference Wednesday.
Indonesia and Malaysia agreed to continue to provide humanitarian assistance to those 7,000 irregular migrants still at sea. We also agreed to offer them temporary shelter, provided that the settlement and repatriation process will be done in 1 year by the international community.
Aman said that under the deal, Malaysia and Indonesia will continue to provide humanitarian assistance to the estimated 7,000 stranded migrants. The foreign minister also called on other nations and NGOs to assist in the mission. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko says Ukraine is in a real war with Russia, not just pro-Russia separatists. In an interview with BBC, Mr. Poroshenko warned that he believes Russia is preparing a military offensive for which Ukrainians must be ready. He said Ukraine must not give Russia any tiny chance for provocation. Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza has signed a decree delaying parliamentary and local elections until June 5th, following a coup attempt and anti-government protests. The president of Burundi's Electoral Commission confirmed the move Wednesday to VOA's French to Africa service. The new date delays parliamentary elections by 10 days. There is no word on whether the commission will delay the presidential election scheduled for June 26th. Five of the world's largest banks face around $5.7 billion in penalties for illegally colluding to manipulate prices and currency exchange. Officials at the U.S. Department of Justice says Wednesday that current traders at these banks worked as collaborators rather than as competitors, making or holding off purchases to manage the prices of dollars and euros. I'm Bob Doty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to African News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, has agreed to delay parliamentary and local elections until June 5th, following protests and a coup attempt.
That's Hilary Hewler reporting from VOA's East Africa Bureau in Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also in the news, the only international observers during Ethiopia's elections on Sunday will be from the African Union, and a joint force of French and Nigerian troops captured tons of drugs and weapons during a firefight with Islamist rebels in the Sahel.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza has agreed to delay parliamentary and local elections until June 5th, following protest and a coup attempt. Hilary Hewler has more from our East Africa Bureau in Nairobi.
The elections were originally scheduled for May 26th, but with Burundi still in a state of political crisis, they've now been postponed until the following week. Presidential spokesman Willy Nyamitwe says that the delay is at least partly a response to both domestic and international pressure.
Politicians from the opposition have asked the government to delay elections. And the second reason is that head of states from the region and the UN, the AU and EU have urged the government to delay a little elections. And the third reason is that the president got a proposal from the electoral committee.
Nyamitwe says there's been no decision on whether or not to delay presidential elections scheduled to be held June 26th. Burundi has been racked by violence and unrest since late April, when President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to run for a third term. Thousands of protesters took to the streets, saying the move violates a two-term limit in the constitution. But the president's supporters say that since he was elected by parliament, not voters, during his first term, he should be allowed to run again. Mr. Nkurunziza survived a coup attempt last week, but the violence has continued. On Tuesday, police fired tear gas and beat protesters, who vowed to keep protesting until the president steps down. Human rights groups say that at least 20 people have died in the unrest so far. While attending a session of the Pan-African Parliament in South Africa this week, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta told a local television station that regional leaders want the presidential elections postponed.
We first and foremost said that it was necessary, given what was going on, that the elections be postponed, but within the constitutionally allowed mandate of the current government, in order to give us time for us to be able to work together with all parties to see how we can get to a situation where we get an amicable solution.
Meanwhile, more than 100,000 Burundians have fled to neighboring countries. In Tanzania, the World Health Organization has warned of a cholera outbreak among refugees and a lack of clean drinking water. Leaders from the East African community are due to meet next week to review the situation in Burundi. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
As reported, over 100,000 Burundian refugees have gone to Tanzania, Rwanda and the DRC to escape political violence. In Tanzania, tens of thousands of refugees have gathered at the northern fishing village of Kagunga. Two boats have been hired to transport them to the town of Kigoma, about 3 hours away. The boats can transport about 2,000 refugees a day. In Kigoma, the refugees await transport to a refugee camp. Julius Marwa is the regional coordinator for Catholic Relief Services, which is providing food and sanitation for the refugees. From Kigoma, Tanzania, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua about humanitarian operations.
UN agencies and other implementing partners are coordinating efforts at least to reduce the number of refugees from Kagunga, where most of them were entering into Tanzania from Burundi. So they are trying to reduce the number from Kagunga to Kigoma town, and also some are being taken from Kigoma town to the main refugee camp, Nyarugusu camp, which is in Kasuru district. So far, Goma town where refugees are being brought to a transfer center. This is the Lake Tanganyika Stadium. As of yesterday evening, there were almost 4,800 refugees. But today morning, most of them have already been transported from the stadium to Nyarugusu camp. But also we are still waiting others now who are being transported from Kagunga to the stadium.
How far is the camp from Kigoma?
The camp is almost 160 kilometers from Kigoma town.
And they are being taken there by bus, is that correct?
Yes, yes. There are buses which transport them from the stadium to Nyarugusu camp.
What are the major humanitarian issues that you are facing in Kigoma?
So far, there was a major challenge on health issues. There is an outbreak of diarrhea, and it has been confirmed that there is an outbreak of cholera. The response is now coming out, but it was not coming out in previous days, especially on issues pertaining to medications. But now, at least, there is a response. People are getting treated, but not to the level that we want to see.
Does your organization and other humanitarian agencies need any particular international assistance to aid you in your helping the refugees?
Definitely, yes, because there is a huge number of refugees, and you can see with the increasing number of refugees, any support for the needs is required from the international level. People need community services. People need healthcare services. Everything. We have a lot actually can be provided by the international agencies to support the situation. People need food. Yes, we have adequate food. But still, with this number, there must be an additional support for that.
Julius Marwa is the regional coordinator for Catholic Relief Services from Kigoma, Tanzania. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa.
The only international observers during Ethiopia's elections on Sunday will be from the African Union. Opposition parties already feel the AU observers are not demanding enough in their criticism of Ethiopia's election process, which is dominated by the ruling party. Marta Vandewolf reports from Addis Ababa.
The African Union has sent observers to Ethiopia for national elections this Sunday, May 24. 9 long-term observers, LTOs, arrived in April, and another 50 short-term observers arrived last week. Former Namibian president Hifikepunye Pohamba heads the mission. He commends Ethiopia for being stable and peaceful, even while located in a volatile region, but also mentioned points for review.
The National Electoral Board of Ethiopia is appointed by the Prime Minister and approved by the Parliament of Ethiopia. The AU LTOs noted that some interlocutors have expressed a concern in the manner of the appointment of the National Electoral Board of Ethiopia and urged that more political stakeholders be consulted in order for the process to be more transparent and inclusive.
The long-term observers also raised concerns about Ethiopia's anti-terrorism law and how it could be used to undermine freedom of expression and the media's right to protection of their sources and rights. Long-term observers of the African Union have so far visited 20 districts in 8 regions and will leave after the first week of June. But opposition parties are not impressed with the African Union observers. One of them is Blue Party spokesman Jonathan Tesfai.
We don't think AU is an international observer. So it's just a legitimacy of dictatorship. It's just a cover. I mean, like, you have the US who refused one way or another. And you have the EU, which somehow said it, like admitted that the previous observations hasn't done anything. It doesn't have a progress. So if there was a progress, well, it could be, you know, to enhance the whole process, that would be useful. But now, it's all the same. In fact, it's going backwards.
Ethiopia's last elections in 2010 were observed by a European Union mission. The ruling party EPRDF won those elections in a landslide, taking all but one seat in parliament. According to a recent European Union statement, the EU decided to sit out this year's elections because its previous recommendations to Ethiopia were not accepted. Government spokesman Redwan Hussein says there was a difference of opinion between the Ethiopian government and the final recommendations of the EU mission.
Whatever prescription they made, it had nothing to do with election. It has to do with the entire democratic system and legal system and policy issues. So we didn't subscribe to that subscription because it has nothing to do with election.
Nearly 37 million Ethiopians are registered for the Sunday elections. More than 5,800 candidates from 58 political parties are running for parliament and regional offices. Less than 1,300 of the candidates are female, a situation the African Union attributes to a lack of resources and a lack of encouragement in Ethiopia's culture. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza has agreed to delay parliamentary and local elections until June 5th following protests and a coup attempt. The only international observers during Ethiopia's elections on Sunday will be from the African Union. And a joint force of French and Nigerian troops captured tons of drugs and weapons during a firefight with Islamist rebels in the Sahel. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Italian authorities say they have arrested a suspect in the March 18th bombing of a museum in Tunis, Tunisia. The man had been expelled by Sicilian immigration a month before the attack. Police say they arrested Toul Abdelmajid Tuesday evening in Gacchiano near Milan on a Tunisia arrest warrant. An anti-terrorism investigator says Abdelmajid was expelled from Sicily when he attempted to immigrate to Europe on February 17th. Tunisian authorities arrested several suspects shortly after the bombing. They said they had killed the leader during the attack on the Bardo Museum, an assault that killed 22 tourists. The arrest sparked renewed criticism of the Italian Navy's year-long effort to rescue thousands of migrants from Mediterranean waters. The Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime says the EU plan to capture and destroy vessels on the Mediterranean will have no long-term effect. They say that's because inflatable boats can easily be replaced. Smugglers often let migrants pilot the craft, and larger vessels will be hard to identify among heavy commercial traffic. The EU has invited an envoy from the Tobruk-based government of the country to discuss EU plans to patrol Libyan waters. Libya has complained about not being included in the EU talks. Libyan Special Envoy Nouri Beyt Almal is meeting this week with EU officials.
European Union countries are locked in an increasingly bitter battle over proposals to set quotas for accepting asylum seekers and other migrants fleeing Africa and the Middle East. What has become of European solidarity in handling the Mediterranean migrant crisis? Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
After agreeing on tough new measures this week to fight illegal migration at sea, the 28-member European Union is not very unified on welcoming asylum seekers at home. Prime Minister Matteo Renzi of Italy, which is struggling to cope with a surge of migrants crossing the Mediterranean, has accused other European countries of trying to ignore the crisis. Germany has questioned European solidarity, as has the European Commission's first vice president, Hans Timmermans, who spoke Wednesday at the European Parliament in Strasbourg, France.
But in our view, it is not acceptable for people to say, yes, we want you to stop people from drowning, but at the same time, stay silent on where these people should go once they have been rescued.
The European Commission has proposed setting quotas for member states to accept refugee seekers, so countries like Italy, Greece, and Malta, which are on the front lines of the Mediterranean migration crisis, don't have to shoulder all the burden. The quota proposal is part of a larger plan to handle the thousands of migrants trying to cross the Mediterranean, with many dying in the process. EU countries agreed Monday on a naval mission to crack down on migrant smugglers, but they are split on quotas. Britain and Spain have rejected the proposal.
Il n'est pas question qu'il y ait des quotas d'immigrants.
So has France, after first appearing to accept it. French President François Hollande said this week that national immigration rules must be observed, and asylum seekers do not need quotas.
Tisztelt Hölgyeim és Uraim, meggyőződésem, hogy az, amit most javaslatként ismerünk.
Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán has gone further, denouncing the quota idea as bordering on insanity. Analysts say there are plenty of reasons for the resistance, including high unemployment and surging anti-immigrant sentiment in Europe. Critics also fault EU members for failing to address the root causes of the Mediterranean migration that they are fighting against. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
French military authorities in Niger say a joint force of French and Nigerian troops captured 1.5 tons of drugs and weapons during a firefight with Islamist rebels in the Sahel. Operation Barkhane forces fired on a convoy of pickup trucks that refused to stop for a checkpoint inspection on May 14th. French soldiers discovered the drugs and weapons in several white trucks after defeating the militants. Drug running is a major source of revenue for jihadist movements, and Niger's northeastern desert is an important transit zone for illegal trafficking from the Sahel to Libya. Operation Barkhane began in 2014 when 3,000 French troops joined with troops from Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger to combat emerging jihadist forces.
And in news from outside the continent, UN aid agencies report the humanitarian impact of the nearly two-month Saudi-led bombing campaign in Yemen and a blockade of fuel and other imported relief supplies is enormous. The agencies are appealing to the warring factions to agree to another ceasefire so essential aid can be delivered to the population. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN aid agencies are taking stock of the situation in Yemen following a recent five-day humanitarian pause to allow for the delivery of life-saving assistance. They say they are extremely troubled by what they see. They say the few days in which the guns fell, more or less silent, has allowed them to view the extent of suffering being endured by hundreds of thousands of citizens displaced by the conflict. The UN Refugee Agency has revised its displacement figure upwards from 300,000 2 weeks ago to more than 545,000 now. The death toll also has gone up over the past 2 months of escalating fighting. Latest United Nations figures put the number killed at 1,849 and the number wounded at nearly 7,400. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says the temporary ceasefire agreed to by the Saudi Arabian coalition and Houthi rebels has allowed aid workers to access areas that had previously been off limits.
What we found were traumatized populations, people afraid, upset, and struggling to meet their basic needs. In the Amant al-Asimeh area of Sana'a, we interviewed displaced people staying with host families where several households were crowding under a single roof with inadequate bathrooms and water supply. Fuel shortages make it difficult to pump water.
Many people were economically vulnerable before the crisis. Now, Edward says, they are even worse off. He says most have lost their livelihoods and are entirely dependent on aid. He tells VOA the severe shortage of fuel in the country due to import restrictions on commercial and humanitarian aid continues to be a critical issue. He says the lack of fuel is compounding many existing difficulties.
It's pushing up prices. It's making it difficult for people to get about. The amount of fuel we were able to bring in is really only a drop in the ocean of needs, approximately 10% of the amount of fuel needed in the space of a month. So you can see there's significant need to get more in.
The UN Refugee Agency reports the humanitarian pause made it possible to fly in more aid and transport supplies to distribution hubs in the capital Sana'a and Aden. It says in-country stocks of relief items now are 3 times higher than they were before the pause. However, it notes checkpoints, insecurity, and high transport prices make it difficult to move about and distribute aid to the people in need. The World Food Program says it too is experiencing similar difficulties. WFP says it had planned to provide food to nearly 750,000 people during the humanitarian pause, but it was only able to reach 400,000. It says it needs more time and more security to help those in need. The agency is appealing for what it calls a series of predictable breaks in the fighting to be able to deliver food to the hungry. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Jackson Witt, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. For over 50 years, the Voice of America has been broadcasting to Africa in English. Today, VOA is a dynamic international multimedia broadcaster, serving an estimated weekly global audience of 171 million people, with Africa as its largest audience. So, join us Wednesday at 18:30 UTC as we look ahead at VOA's plans for the future on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Mpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right?